Welcome to Level with Emily Reese. This is music by Joel Korolitz for The Tomorrow Children, which just came out this week. I first spoke with Joel a few years ago after he did the music for The Unfinished Swan. That was an amazing indie game on the PlayStation Network that I loved, and I definitely loved Joel's music too. Anyway, you'll hear more from Joel in just a bit. And our Patron of the Week is coming up too, but I have just a couple of things I want to say first. Sam and I just got back from a great time in Seattle at PAX West. The local game audio scene there is so, so great, and we got to hang out at PopCap with 4/6 of the audio team, and it was fun to see all the Plants and Zombies art and toys and the giant, like, 50-inch touchscreen that I got to play Bejeweled on and all kinds of just cool stuff all over their offices. And the people were great, too, of course. We spent time with Guy Whitmore, Damian Kaspauer, Jacqueline Shoemate, and Luca Fusi, and they've all worked on all of those PopCap properties like Peggle and Bejeweled and Plants vs. Zombies. It was a lot of fun. And a huge thanks to our other local friends there, composers Ryan Ike and Jacob Purnell. Ryan will be on the show sometime in the future to talk about his music for the game, Shiny. Additionally, I lost a lot of stuff while I was there that consequently got taken. That didn't happen at PAX, but it did happen in Seattle. And a special thanks goes out to a very special group of people who helped me with that situation. It means a lot to me. All right, let's hear from Patron of the Week, David Morton. He loves the music from the game Splatoon, and also from a Rockstar game that I've always wanted to play but never did. It's called Bully, and we start with Bully.
Often there is a discussion among gamers about what is your favorite Rockstar property, or what property of Rockstar's would you like to see come back the most that isn't Grand Theft Auto. And yeah. As great as Red Dead is, as great as ping pong and table tennis was, for me, it is absolutely Bully, because Bully exemplified all of Rockstar's best habits and practices, but in a much smaller and more densely populated world.
And it's about school, right?
Oh, yeah. In fact, some of the mechanics and the day-to-day, quote-unquote, mechanics of it are brilliant. And the way – something that I'm big on in my games is the gameplay loop and how things tie back to one another, and if you can see something you do in one place have an impact on another. And between the classes and some of the other things you would find in the world, they would have direct impacts on the things you could do. So if you went to school and you got better at English, you could talk to girls more easily and kiss them for health benefits. Or if you were better at chemistry, you could have better and more powerful weapons, or shop would give you better bikes. And so you saw that loop and that gameplay that I like so much get used in a really interesting and useful way. And also considering that this was, I think, 2006 or 2008, so you don't quite have the expectations then that you did now, I feel like.
So tell me about that music for the final boss battle, right?
It is indeed. And leading up to that, I feel as though I have to say that he plays with that main theme from the final showdown all leading up to that. As you're running around from part to part of the school, you're forced to go back and battle the heads of the various cliques, be it the greasers or the jocks or the nerds or whatever. And as you go back, Sean continues to play with that melody and adding a little bit to it and continuing to add bells and guitar and a little more percussion here and a little more percussion there. And at the last second, you're dropped into the final battle and bop, 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 bop. And the song kicks in with the full fist to the gut, so to speak.
So tell me about Splatoon.
Oh my goodness, Splatoon was a revelation for me last summer. I went into the Splatfest, like the pre-release Splatfest, thinking this is a solid concept, but it's going to be just too Nintendo to be a good shooter of any kind. There's not going to be the voice chat stuff, even though I'm not going to use it. It just doesn't – Nintendo's not going to get this right the first time through, even though Nintendo's always pretty much always gotten it right the first time through, in my opinion. But so with that said – Back and forth. I buy the game on release day, and we start playing it that night, my group of two other friends and I. And before we know it, it's 3 a.m, and we're still going. And every time this one song would come on during these battles, I would find myself doing everything I could not to grab the controller out of my friend's hands, because I would just get so excited. The whole sound design of everything helped to just work me up into a fervor about getting and playing more and more of this game. And it was personified perfectly by that particular track with the Ooga Booga Boogas and the hard guitar and just cute but 90s squid metal if I've ever heard it. It's not a very complex song. It's in terms of like some of the other things that I think of when I think of good game music and even just good music in general. Like, it's a very simple, even repetitive distorted guitar part. It's got a fast-paced drum part and nonsensical lyrics. But with that said, I'm a 90s alternative rock fan, like more than anything in the world. So that kind of feels like it would be right up my alley. And also, being a drummer, melody is not the first thing that I notice. Like, I've noticed a good beat and a good rhythm.
David's other choices were Monokuma's Lesson from Danganronpa by Masafumi Takada, and Monomi's theme from Super Danganronpa 2 by Masafumi Takada. So much more from Yakuza 5 by Mitsuharu Fukuyama and Company. And Pan Con Queso from Tropico 5. If you'd like to share your favorite video game music with us, you can find out how to become a patron of the week at patreon.com/level. Composer Joel Corliss, you might have heard his music in that, like, ridiculously adorable indie game called The Unfinished Swan that came out in 2012. We did an interview together about that score years ago, and I was really excited to hear that for this interview we could talk about three games that he's done. A favorite of mine from 2014 called Hohokum, and a game that came out this week called The Tomorrow Children, and a game that's not even out yet called Tumbleseed. We started off talking about the beautifully wacky and fun game Hohokum.
Hokum was conceived by a developer based in London called Honeyslug, and all the art is this beautiful, whimsical, hand-drawn art by an artist named Dick Hogg. And they had, before I got involved, they had worked a deal with Ghostly International, which is this awesome electronic record label originally based in Ann Arbor, although now I think they're either just there or in New York or both places, to license music from Ghostly to go with the game. But they needed additional music for important moments in the game, like these hallway spaces, which I think eventually got renamed corridors in the game. And that's when there's these areas between levels. So either between your home world or whatever level you're going to, that give you some options in terms of where to go. And they needed musical spaces for those areas, which is something I'm really interested in, because I love the idea that music, when it's presented in an interactive context, is not linear anymore. It's spatial. And so it was a cool opportunity to create kind of something that I feel like I've been inhabiting a lot, which is this idea of like a piece of music that's not ambient. Like, ambient kind of implies that it doesn't have any guts. It can. I mean, and I don't want to disparage ambient music because I love it, but kind of this blend between something that's still got some melodic content and some identity, but also doesn't have a set start and end point. So it's not necessarily lyrical or singable, or melodic even, but it's got this sort of like liquid character to it that really works well for those spaces. So we worked on that, and there was also, every time you find one of your friends in Hohokam, there's a stinger that plays that we also created, and there is one secret bonus piece of music that's hidden in the game.
Really?
Well, there's a thing that you can do once you find all your friends, and then there's...
If you would, just try and describe a little bit some of the levels and some of the unique things that you get to do in that game and how you were able to respond to those with the music.
Everything is beautifully wacky and it's quirky, but as someone that kind of hates to use the word quirky, I almost don't want to use it, but because I feel like that word leans on humor too much. But there's something that's really innocent and fluid and beautiful about the game, but also there's a certain kind of contemplative character to it too. And so a lot of the spaces, the musical spaces that we created, some of them are a little bit more busy and are meant to mirror the activity of the scene. Like, there's this factory, it's called the Guano Factory, and there are these strange insects, and one of the pieces is meant to kind of mirror the activity, the insects buzzing around. I think particularly in some of the water-oriented levels, the music and the mood of the game is kind of somber in a way, which is a nice, it kind of takes you through a really great range of emotions as you play the game. And so for that, there's kind of a liquid character. What was cool about it, just for me personally, is like the sandbox genre is something that my generation, I feel like I still struggle with the idea of like playing a game that doesn't have an end. And that's me personally. Even though Hohokam has an end, it's totally like a legitimate place to just play. And it's a, It's one of those kinds of games that I think really connected with me.
You have new games out too, and we'll kind of come back and forth between all of them, I think, because I'm so fascinated by the stylistic differences, but a new project called The Tomorrow Children, which I'm fascinated with, and another game called Tumble Seeds.
The Tomorrow Children came out yesterday, so that was really exciting. I put a lot of work and a lot of heart and soul into the soundtrack, and it's great to finally unleash it. The game was in development for a long time, and because it's a multiplayer game, there was really extensive beta testing. And so my soundtrack was kind of alive throughout the whole beta period.
Nice.
But I wanted to be kind of tight-lipped about it until it was officially released. And so that happened yesterday, and it feels really good.
Oh, I bet. And I mean, what a fascinating story in general. And you know, there's almost like some Blade Runner moments at times, but then there's this beautiful, like, Russian-esque choir that just barks along in the background and some really beautiful things. So talk to me about the mix of music in there.
The score for The Tomorrow Children is very much similar to way that different characters and different emotions were articulated in The Unfinished Swan. The score for The Tomorrow Children is very much a dual score.
Interesting, okay.
And I think in a lot of ways, one way, which is kind of the propaganda music that is usually played for the player through speakers that are actually in the environment, so the music is diegetic, and that music is meant to be propaganda music. Mm-hmm. It's meant to give you a sense of community and pride, and it's supposed to be a familiar way that governments or whoever's in charge motivates the people that it's trying to control. The other side of the score for The Tomorrow Children is the ambient music that you hear out in the world. So in contrast, it's not diegetic. It's not coming out of speakers in the world. It's actually, I think it's the true way that the world sounds. And granted, it's background music in the game, so it's not coming from anywhere, but it's kind of meant to give the player a sense of what the world is really like. That's what I love about doing what I do, is like to have two completely different styles on the same score and to get to kind of do a deep dive into propaganda music and what is propaganda music and why does it sound like it does, and kind of making it recognizable as propaganda music, because it's a genre. And what's interesting about that kind of music is you listen to propaganda music from any country, any culture, it's basically all the same. I think one of the coolest realizations I came to with Pete Scaturro, the music supervisor, was like when we hear the word propaganda, we think of something insidious. And then you sit down and you try to make a piece of propaganda. And I think that insidious quality that we interpret in the word propaganda kind of comes to the surface, and it works its way into the art. And I think one of the first things I had to do was get rid of all that, because propaganda is meant to make people not see it as propaganda in a way.
Right.
That sort of led to me exploring not only military music, but studying and listening to Shostakovich and
yes,
some of the real music from that era. And And the score, the propaganda music in the game draws really heavily on that kind of stuff. And particularly, and one thing I think is really interesting about Shostakovich, in particular the Fifth Symphony, is that it was kind of meant as propaganda, but it has those undertones of criticism in it. I think the other side of the score is the ambient music in the game. And that is, it's it kind of rides the line between like a defined composition and a musical space. And the music actually changes based on how many other characters or other players are in the scene with you.
Okay.
But this music plays on the islands, which are areas away from the town. So there's no speakers, there's no sound emitters on these islands. These are the places where you gather resources. So it's a lot of synthesizers, but synthesizers played kind of strangely, like to try to use synthesizers in a way that's like really imperfect and almost letting the machines have a mind of their own. And that's something I explored pretty deeply with this, was the idea of like not quantizing things, playing things kind of messy, having the compositions be really experimental. And that's what Q Games really wanted. They really pushed me to make these really unusual, which was great.
Tell me a little bit about Tumbleseeds.
It's Tumbleseed singular.
Tumbleseed.
Tumbleseed refers to the character that you're controlling. So in Tumbleseed, you're actually controlling a vine, which is it's a horizontal surface, and you can tilt the left and right side of the vine up and down, and the seed always stays on the vine. So you can roll it to the left and right, and then up. So your goal is to progress up this mountain, which has been infected. So there's some really interesting kind of indirect control happening in the game, because you are pushing the seed by virtue of controlling a vine, but you are also, you're giving a lot of control up to physics. And the physics in the game is really fine-tuned, and so it takes a lot of practice and a lot of patience and skill to effectively maneuver the seed, but it's really satisfying when you get the hang of it. Flavor of the game is very plant oriented, because you're a seed, you're small, and so you're rolling up this mountain, but there's worms and there's plant life and there's holes and puddles and things, and you have to maneuver your way around them, and there's different power-ups. And Tumbleseed is another example of, I'm really into the idea of the only way to really properly listen to a video game score is to play the game. One of the most exciting things to me about this is the potential for non-linearity in music, because we're so used to listening like that. We listen from point A to point B, and that's great. There's nothing really wrong with that, except that in a game, we don't have to abide by that. So it's really fun to explore it and try different ways to present music. So Tumbleseed kind of has a similar quality to some of the other projects I talked about, even though the style is not similar at all. But what it shares is that the music is intended to be kind of a blur between environmental music or ambient music and thematic background music. Making kind of plucked, like plinky kind of sounds with synthesizers. It's something that they do really well, and it's really fun. And it works with this kind of game. And the other thing that I did a lot of is there's a lot of sampled material in the game that was integrated into the music. So I started on the game around last fall. And one of the first things I did was I went around the neighborhood I have two boys, and at the time they were 7 and 3, and we walked around and we gathered buckets of acorns, and then we dragged in these big flagstones from the side of our house and tilted one of the stones up and just rolled seeds down it and got sticks and broke sticks and threw them. Just recorded. It was really it was a fun thing to do with them, and I think they've been kind of part of the development process in a way, because they've seen the game evolve and they've heard the sounds. And so I'm doing not just the music but the sound, I think, makes sense for this kind of experience. And so a lot of those sounds have been integrated into the music, and a lot of them have been kind of the genesis of like the sound design. And the core feel of the sound design is deeply rooted in sampled material. It's been manipulated and processed to some extent because the game is so stylized. And this is always kind of like an interesting conundrum, I think, for composers and sound designers, where if the game is stylized, do you want to, on one hand, go for a really realistic sound because you want to conjure the reality? Or do you want to go for something really stylized to parallel the visuals of the world? And we've done a little of both. There's a whole piece that's composed from samples I recorded from just one rubber band.
What kinds of live things did you have for the Tomorrow Children? I mean, clearly you had a choir.
We did. Yeah, that was really cool. So that's a men's choir, because it's meant to all the military stuff and all the propaganda stuff we listened to. It was always kind of a military choir, very regimented, very, you know, everything is very kind of like sharply articulated. And so that was a men's choir we recorded at Abbey Road, which was really cool. And then the orchestra it's all an orchestra. One of the cool things too about what the choir is actually singing is there's kind of a made-up language in the game that is meant to sound like Russian, but it's a lot of Russian syllables that have been scrambled around and then pronounced like Japanese.
It's just been a pleasure to experience your music ever since The Unfinished Swan, and we definitely look forward to hearing what's coming next.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can learn more about composer Joel Korolits at patreon.com/level and at joelkorolits.com. Thank you for listening to episode 38 of Level with Emily Rees. To learn about becoming a patron of the week, visit patreon.com/level. I'm Emily Rees. Sam Keenan is our producer. Say hi, Sam.
Hi.
You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Level with Emily and learn more about Sam and me at june-media.com. Remember, June is J-O-O-N.